Oh, have I, is my lighting okay? I can change my lighting as
well. We're recording now, so oh my goodness.
There you go.
Oh, you're like a ghost when you go the full white with that background. It kind of
it's
all happening.
I look like a false ghost, but I've also got natural light today as well. You know,
this is as natural lighting as it gets for me at the moment.
It snowed there, Chris. It snowed here.
It's snowing, but it's not sticking. So
it's stuck. Class. I woke up and saw the snow, and I was like, that's weird.
And it was a little bit sleety when I was out.
Actually, Chris will enjoy this. The only reason I noticed it was snowing is I got out of bed, I was getting dressed, I was putting my sock on, I fell over.
Almost
fell out of my window, and as I was half falling out of my window, I noticed it was snowing.
Which foot is the sock on these days? do you alternate?
Left, yeah.
Yeah, or is it left. Just, yeah.
Socks on the left, shoes on the right.
That's illegalitarian there. Each according to its warmth, each according to its need, or whatever it is. It's not sticking for us. It's more sleety, really. We don't usually get much in the way of snow. We don't actually.
That's the thing. Yeah, it's really unusual now.
You don't get snow in England.
No.
We don't.
I've seen it in Wales, though.
Yeah, but this you part of Wales.
No, you didn't.
the part of Wales that I'm in is in a bit of a rain shadow. It's like not as rainy as the rest of Wales. So I don't know if that affects the snow either. I mean, it's sleety rather than snowy, to be honest. So I am going out today. So it didn't dampen the plans.
Good.
So, right. Okay. Yeah, this was by far and away the hardest episode to stop watching that because the end of the last episode, whilst it wasn't really a cliffhanger, but it was like it gave you a good setup for the next episode, right?
That was they ended on let's use the Naboo to battering ram Eros,
and this one, right? I mean, Eros just moved.
as large asteroids are wont to do, yeah.
Move discreetly, just out of the way. I mean, it looked like on the chart that it had just literally
But like, the amount of energy to divert an asteroid by like that much, like an enormous amount of energy.
Yeah, like it's so what is this what is the proto molecule like?
What makes you think the proto molecule is getting to do with it?
Oh, do you think it's just random?
No, I mean, it was clearly, I mean, this is, I'm just speculating here. I've not watched the rest of the show. it was the Mormon ship that they were going to wreck. So God saved it by moving the asteroid.
Shit. Didn't even think of that.
Obvious.
Oh, man.
Because you've got no faith, Chris.
Or is the protomolecule God?
That's, I like that.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, on a religious-y kind of thing, I always felt like God was an indefinable concept. Or is that kind of the point?
I think that's the point. Yeah, I mean, big arguments about the personification of God in the history of Catholicism and Christianity in general. But yeah, I kind of think that's the point.
Because I think we've had this conversation before, where you could interpret the sun as a god because it sort of, you know, creates and sustains all life on Earth.
Yeah, it gives light, literally gives life. I mean, the sun was worshipped, you know.
And the sun was worshipped. And also, even in modern Christian artwork, are we the right order? I feel like we came in the wrong order.
No, we're perfect.
Oh, okay, fantastic.
You filthy inners are on the correct side of the recording.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I'm so sorry, but I might have to stop.
It's Peanut.
You got to deal with Peanut.
We've just been out, and he didn't do anything.
No, keep this all in.
Keep it all in.
We'll talk about the imagery.
You can start. Well, you could.
Let him out. We'll talk about it.
He's been out. It's just we've literally just come back from a walk just before I started recording. I will be right back. You filthy inners can keep doing what you're doing for a few minutes. I'll be right back.
Okay. All right. He calls us the filthy ones.
I know. We need to declare war on the belt. Just wipe them out.
We're the ones with functioning governments.
I mean, I know you've got like our planet's quite cool, but you've got a ton of like unemployed poor people on your planet. So if we depopulate the belt, we could send your poor people to work there. kills two birds with one stone.
Well, yeah, but like we don't like dislike our poor people, right? Like we just give them basic subsistence salary. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, but if they're working for a living out on the belt, you rich people can have more. And I know that's how you like it over there. That's just a
prejudice, earthen stereotype. That is
decadent earthers.
We've just cracked on, you know,
with your air and your seas.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of like I don't know. Like Earth definitely seems to get a bit of a bad rap for being gluttonous and greedy, but like if the Earth. Identity is confined to the planet,
mm-hmm.
then like is like are we just getting by? Are we just cracking on with it?
I think I can't remember where in the show, but somebody makes this point in the show that like I think they've already made it that in the context of the show, Mars can look at Earth and go like, oh, they're so wasteful, they've ruined their environment. But that was all the stuff that enabled the Martians to go to Mars. Without that They wouldn't be able to go. Yeah. So
is that a little bit like a parallel to industrialization, where it's like the West had a lot of industrialization that allowed us to like jump ahead in technology ahead of other people, and now the other countries are in their industrialization phase, we sort of chide them because they're not being environmentally friendly, despite the fact that they're only doing in the past.
It's a double insult because what enabled industrialization really was obviously the technological developments, but colonialization is the resources from colonialization. So we robbed them of their resources, used them for our industrialization, and now tell them.
Yeah. Actually, on that, this is a weird one, right? But. Weird tangent, but I found this out to be quite interesting. So I was reading the Wikipedia page of Alexander the Great because I don't really know fuck all about Alexander the Great. We never did him in school.
I went through one would call it a hyperfixation when I was young on Alexander the Great. I loved him and read a lot about him. Yeah,
yeah, and actually he was actually a bit more in the past than I thought. It was about 350-ish BC, or what they call it BCE now, and. He was under the tutelage of Aristotle, and in order for that to happen, apparently Aristotle's village, when he was a bit younger, got razed, and he wanted it rebuilt and repopulated. So either Alexander the Great or like his household or like you know the people around him were like, okay, what we'll do, we'll rebuild it, and we'll buy and free a whole bunch of slaves to populate it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that's cool.
Have just remembered that because I only just like read through the Wikipedia page once, but like, I was thinking, who's the good guy out of this? Maybe Aristotle? I don't know. Like, or is there someone amongst the deals that were like, you know what, we could probably free a bunch of slaves in this?
I mean, to be fair, classical slavery was very different from, because when we think slavery, we think American slavery, industrial, slavery, and classical slavery. Not like it was always good, but mostly wasn't anywhere near that bad, and sometimes was a better living than being a serf or something.
Yeah,
there's examples of slaves in what's his name? David Graeber goes on about it in Madagascar, and also throughout the classical world. Mm. Slaves had wages; they could buy their own freedom. Slaves could even buy other slaves, so there was slaves who just rented other slaves to people. It's a complex. It's a big and complex thing. Yeah.
Is David Graeber an anarchist?
I would say so. Yeah. He's on the side. Yeah, he's dead now. Yeah. But
was it quite recently?
Probably about within the last decade, I would say.
I'm sure I've seen David Graeber. I'm sure I've seen him on podcasts. Like he's.
Oh no!
Hang on. Yeah, David Graeber. He's been on podcasts.
I mean, yes, but not since not dying.
Not since dying, no. Like, hang on, but he was on like, I don't know, like
2020.
Recently? Yeah. Okay. Very briefly, Alexander the Great. This may be apocryphal, whatever. But there's a story that when Alexander the Great got to India, his army was stopped for a couple of days because they encountered monkeys and tried to communicate with them. They just thought they were small, hairy people.
And did they succeed?
No, they didn't.
Oh, okay.
Moved on.
I mean, that kind of stuff would probably happen during like colonizing.
First time you see a monkey, you know, very human
like. Apparently, in heraldry, like, there's all kind of confusion over what things like jaguars and lions look like, because the vast majority of people like don't even know what a lion looks like. Because even back then, like illustrations or even books, like, were kind of like really rare or like very specific.
Well, have you read that? There's that famous, I think it's the Aberdeen Bestiary that you can view online, and it's a medieval cataloguing of animals and their behaviors and reproductive habits and that. And it's stuff like weasels can't be trusted and give birth through their eyes and stuff like that. Like, it's absolute fucking nonsense.
That's amazing. I mean, is that, but butterflies do taste through their feet, so there is some, I think. God, what if you stepped in dog shit?
I've never licked a butterfly's feet to find out. Oh, you mean the other way around, right? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, oh my God, yeah. Tasting through your feet is the most disgusting thing I can imagine. That's like a divine torture, isn't it?
Walking around tasting things.
Yeah.
What's worse is the insects that eat in their pupal form, and then they go into the pupa, and then they emerge as their final form without a mouth. That's just their breeding form, and like all they can do is fuck and then die. Horrible.
That's death by snoo-snoo. Oh my God! See, this is so. This is the trajectory, by the way, of Eros. So it just went
pretty sudden. Yeah,
I mean, I love the crudity of that diagram. I love that is a diagram for the audience, not for the crudity.
Yeah, because it's like so far out, it's unbelievable.
Actually, that arrow, I've seen that arrow before. I use Organic Maps, and it's actually a pretty good sat nav replacement for Google. That is the arrow of you. That's your car arrow. That's like
you
that's
are what, here.
Yeah, that's the you are here, right? Like, it looks just like it. And also with Organic Maps, you can actually, I'm sure you could do this with all the others as well. You can have it so that map is north, and then you're like a video game just going.
I've never used a GPS in my life.
Of course not. But you can even use them for walking now.
Do you know what? It's another thing that Danny, since the hurricane, some of her habits have changed. She's wearing a wristwatch because she didn't have a phone didn't work and that. She's also stopped using GPS because she didn't have GPS during the hurricane, you know, after the hurricane, because no internet and blah, blah, blah. And she's just
the GPS. GPS. Yeah, for the map part, yeah. Seriously, GPS does rely on.
yeah, it's but it's, oh my God, if you're ever in a tunnel and suddenly, and you don't really know where you are, and did he not do anything this time?
No, he pooped, but now he's gone mental. He just had he's gone bananas in the other.
That's
room.
that's just like sometimes animals get a bit of energy after they, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, I do.
One out. Yeah, sometimes. It's just like, oh God, I've known. Well, cats
I was just thinking, he's very like you, Drew. He doesn't use a toilet seat.
Oh, good dog.
Yeah. I love that's one of your points of pride, isn't it? Like,
main characteristic, first on my CV.
Yeah. So either God or the Proton. Ah. this is what we do if we do it.
I had another thing to say about colonialism as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know when we get, you know, often like Americans will berate us because we're the ones who went out and conquered the world. I'm talking about white Americans here, but like, we're the ones who stayed here. They fucking—they're the descended from the ones who went and did it.
Yeah,
not so we didn't benefit from ones. It, but we're the ones who were like, no, thank you, we don't want to do that.
Yeah. Was there presumably to like be able to move across the rest of the world required some degree of privilege that your average working class Joe wouldn't have.
Yeah, but you could have gone as like a settler. Or there was a lot of very poor people who went just to work and be immigrants. And yeah.
Oh, my lighting is terrible. And
I quite like it. You are force ghostly.
Is that best? Kind of all right, I guess. I could do.
All right, back on topic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Right. So The protomolecule is.
We've jumped straight to the end again. Is this?
Yeah, I know.
We can't going to keep doing that.
You can't well, not. I think.
I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
it's the big thing that just happened.
It's the big thing. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you open with your banger, right?
Yeah, so... but people that are watching it might be going, "What else happened in this episode? Where? How did we get here?"
I mean, I would assume that if people are watching this, they've watched the episode.
Yeah,
go and watch the episode first.
If you haven't, go. It's a very good show. What are you doing?
Yeah,
watch the show. So, you're going to get way more information watching the show than you are listening to us.
And I don't know, like, is this kind of like really the only thing that happened in this? There were other, obviously.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's the only.
There's a lot of character story stuff.
Crux. Yeah,
but this is the main thrust of the. Well,
we do probably worth mentioning. I don't know if he's watching yet, but he said he would start watching
French Ghost.
Cameo from French Ghosty in this episode.
Oh, yeah. Well, he does kind of look a bit like French Ghosty, doesn't he?
He looks a little bit like him. He's got a French accent, so that is French Ghosty, and we've got to call that character French Ghosty.
Although there is the carry on screaming the second monster, you know.
Is that French Ghosty as well?
That's French Ghosty as well, yeah.
carry on screaming the second
monster. The picture I put up in.
I remember, yeah.
So,
because when he's got his headphones on, his hair gets kind of pushed down, and it looks a bit like he's going, you know.
So what the hell happens with the protomolecule and?
Okay, well, so, now you've mentioned the end. Let's rewind back to the beginning and like, how did we get there?
I mean, so
I've got a spot on my elbow. In exactly the position I lean, and I keep going to lean, and it hurts. It's really unpleasant.
That's probably why you've got it. You've been leaning on something that's ground dirt got into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go.
Because this
is not a medical podcast.
Do not take advice.
No.
So how did we get here? We finished the last episode with Holden and Naomi in Fred Johnson's office. Along with Miller going,
we're going to slam the Naboo into Eros.
And Miller's in.
Yeah. And I think, I got to be honest.
That's the start of this episode, isn't it?
I feel a little bit like, and correct me if I'm right or wrong on this one, but I feel like the Holden and Miller's falling out, or particularly Miller's falling out with Holden's falling out with Miller. Like, I get it, he shot an unarmed prisoner. That's in the grand scheme, that's pretty bad.
I understand why Holden's pissed off about it. Also understand why Miller did it. So yeah, it's an understandable. Yeah,
it's two things, and obviously a lot of this episode is Miller going from not sympathizing or empathizing to sympathizing and empathizing. Right?
Well, not really. I think it's more like, because it happens very quickly. Like and I think it's because shit, like that doesn't really matter anymore.
We've got other things to do. Everything's moving quite quickly.
Yeah. Mm,
but also I think him talking to Naomi kind of brings him round. Mm-hmm. I think him talking, I think maybe even like Amos might have, I don't know how Amos folds into this.
I think Amos is talking to Holden more.
Yeah. I think that's since, I mentioned it last time. But
yeah, since the schism.
Yeah.
But also I think maybe it seems to me that Amos might see an alternative viewpoint in Miller, whereas like if he's only taking cues from Naomi, he's only got one perspective. Then Holden comes into the mix where there is like a competing idea of what the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think
is.
He's in his previous
I thought you meant Holden, carry on.
Yeah. Previously in his life, I think he's only ever found one person who he thought was a good person, and now he's got two people who he thinks could potentially be good people. So why not take advice from both of them?
And then Miller comes in who is like, I don't know if you're necessarily a good person, a bad person, a neutral person, some sort of, you know, shade of grey or something, but I think Amos sees value in Miller's perspective.
Well, no, he's... You mean Holden, right?
No. Amos,
oh, you mean Miller?
I mean Amos sees value in Miller's perspective. That's why. That's why there's a little back and forth. Like he might not necessarily agree with Miller, but maybe there's something in Miller's logic that is worth.
Yeah, because it's Amos who's sort of tasked with. No, not necessarily tasked with kicking Miller off the ship, but he gives him his bags.
Yeah, he brings him his. Well, he empties his room out for him and brings him his stuff.
And I think in that conversation, I think it's clear that Amos gets where Miller's coming from with that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when he delivers his stuff, he sort of does a no hard feelings kind of a vibe.
Yeah,
young people's thing.
Yeah, because Miller isn't. Not sorry, Miller. I'm calling everyone Miller for some reason. I don't know why.
Amos, they all work in a granary, so you know. Understand.
Yeah. Amos, I don't like. I don't know if like Amos isn't devoid of empathy, right? He has empathy.
I think he thinks. I think he has diminished empathy and a diminished moral compass, but I think he has more than he thinks he does.
Yeah,
in
the last two episodes, he seems to exhibit more empathy than some of the other characters. Like, for example, he empathizes with the Doctor, maybe because he sees a similarity in the Doctor to himself.
Yes,
but that's totally still empathy, still counts.
Well, I think what it is, because it's called like a flat affect. So he's not, he doesn't wave him. He doesn't get angry when he's beating somebody up. He's not angry. Basically, he's not as emotional. Holden's blinded by his anger at this point, right? Whereas Amos, he doesn't have the anger. He's not blinded by the anger. So I think that's an advantage in some situations.
Yeah, exactly. When like
and it's an interesting thing that they're a team, and they don't quite understand, you know, they're maybe not as conscious of it as they realize, as they saying they should be, but they're maybe not totally conscious of it, but they are a team, and each of them is starting to bring, the three main characters anyway, Alex is always in the ship, the three of them are starting to bring
cohesion, or
a committee thinking to them,
like different,
you know,
different perspectives.
They're not just acting on one of them's viewpoints at the time. Whereas previously it would be, Amos would maybe just do something and they'd have to react to it, or Miller would do something and they'd kind of follow along or reluctantly follow or argue with him and still do it. And the same with Naomi would do things and she'd be a bit more underhand about it, you know, because she's a bit more secretive than the other two.
They're not like a military ship. Like Holden takes charge in situations where you need somebody to take charge, but when they're out of those situations, they kind of operate like a democracy, like they vote on things and come to a consensus.
Yeah. Well, I think each of them are leaders in different ways, right? Mm. Like Holden is the leader of when you're on a mission in a captain kind of role. Naomi is often the peacekeeper or the emotional balancer Amos is like the leader in physical thought, like he is the I think Miller might, and Alex, like he pilots the ship, which is kind of, which is a very technical type of leadership, but and I think, I don't know about Miller, like he seems to be a bit more of a rogue, I don't know from my point of view whether or not Miller's going to be part, like an ongoing part of the Ross and Ante.
Well, I don't think he knows that. I mean, this is the thing about Miller, is we already know that he's kind of a
wanderer.
Yeah, he kind of rails against being in any sort of particular mold or in any particular role. I mean, even as a police officer, he had his own, he made his own decisions. He didn't think about what his job was first, then deal with that. He just decided, who to side with and who not to side with as he went along.
I mean, he's on the ship really because he's found people who are, interested in the same mystery he's kind of investigating still, and also like he's got nowhere else to go.
They have been up until the big incident when he shot the guy and when he shot Dresden, he has been There's an acceptance there. You know, there are a bunch of misfits, and you know, he sort of inadvertently fits in a non-fitting way. You know, in a non-conforming way.
Yeah,
yeah. Actually, I'm kind of thinking now, right, that there's like a sort of a theme emerging of a coming togetherness, right? And one of the, shall we say, like the more brutal and hardline examples might be the protomolecule itself, because maybe it takes things around it and it distills them into a single entity, maybe. Like at the moment, maybe Eros moved because the protomolecule has basically made the asteroid a single basically living entity, and it was like, oh, big things coming my way.
I mean, are you thinking back to last episode with the dude talking about like the seed crystal being at the center and more
vague than that, more sort of spiritually, just the idea that the protomolecule wants to bring things together to become, so it takes disparate things, brings them together into a unifying thing. Mars, people come together, unifying cause. This ship, all different people, Belters, Earthers, Martians, all coming together sort of for a single cause. The UN, you know, nations come together.
You could say that's a theme of the whole show, because the whole show is about people being, you know, sort of separated by circumstances over the last 100 years. Expanse, indeed. Over the last 100 or so years. But from the very start, even the people who were ostensibly against each other have been trying to avoid a war.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's kind of what the whole show is about. They are trying to accept that they are all human. I mean, doesn't somebody make that point at some point?
Yeah, I think somebody has made that. Yeah, I think
maybe has. More than one. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they certainly make the point in the Mars storyline that someone who was born on Earth but basically grew up on Mars is as much Martian as someone who's born on Mars and grew up on Mars.
I think it's a point Holden's made. I think Holden has tried to make a point, maybe it's in the future. I think it's happened. That, you know, we're like, it's not about Belters and Martians and Earthers. We're all, is it snowing? Right. Yeah, it's not about Belters and Martians and humans. Like, we're all humans. Yeah. We're all in this together. And then, you know, of course, Naomi's like, well, it's not that simple from my perspective. And,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like,
yeah. It's like real life. It's great for people to come and go and be all idealist and everything about, we should all stand together about something. But then that's easy if you're in a position of privilege.
Which it is the right answer. Like, it's always the right answer. Like, Holden is right in that situation. But it's getting over that distrust and getting over the inequities, and like, that needs to happen.
Yeah, the inequities is the biggest problem. Yeah. I mean, this is the whole show as well, isn't it? This is one of the big things about the show is that, you know, you can project almost anything in modern life or history onto this canvas that they've made. I mean, that's one of the reasons why it's such a great show and why it works constantly, is because it's so grounded in a realistic perspective.
Or, I mean, does that just say that history just really does repeat itself a lot?
A bit. Yeah.
I think it's partly, we've mentioned this before, I think it's partly because the show has an economy. I think you have to have an economy to have material conditions and material relations that lead to the things that make it echo the real world. Yeah.
See, I kind of like that similar with Game of Thrones. They have an economy there. Like,
yeah, not as full an economy, but yeah, it does it better than Lord of the Rings, which doesn't have an economy at all. Like, at least Game of Thrones recognizes that. Yeah,
yeah, and they have at times brought it into Star Wars, although again at a very, I mean, it changes from show to show what the economy even is.
It's very piecemeal.
Trade embargo
they give, I don't want to say they give the illusion to it, because sometimes it matters to the plot, but it's very like, it's not like there's one running economy through the entire Star Wars franchise. It's like, you take, like, The Mandalorian has a different economy to the film.
I mean, to be fair, it's a massive galactic empire. Like, you know, it's reasonable to imagine that different places have different kind of economic arrangements.
Yeah, yeah. And to be honest, it's more militaristic than it is economic, because it's like, well, the outer rims, the outer bits of the galaxy, like, they're more sort of Wild Westy, because like Tatooine, for example, very well, like sometimes the Imperials will come down and come down with their jack boots, but usually only if there's something that they want or they're in.
Yeah, yeah, they want to do something. Drew, you're a wee bit breathy in the microphone, mate.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. It's just maybe just the angles changed or something. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me know if I do it again.
Yeah,
I can you're doing it right now.
Yeah.
Are you all right? You need to get one of these things. They're great.
Anyway, sorry.
Okay, right. I'm only going to be hearing that now, Hamish. That's sorry. Just.
So is everybody that's watching the show.
Yeah.
Is it going here?
Is it gone now? Is it stopped?
Not really.
No, it's
you're breathing in a certain way. It's...
Oh, really? Usually,
you want to lean back like you do. I think you're just too close to the mic.
I'm quite far away from it.
You're usually like in the corner. You're usually like down here.
No, but I pull the microphone with me.
Yeah, so it's probably just the angle.
Yeah, because the snowball is very like angle centric, as in like.
I assume you can't hear it from here.
No, we can hear it loud and clear.
What the fuck?
It's your nose.
It's your nose. Yeah. Coming?
I mean, not any more than usual. Let me just try reconnecting.
No, it's probably not.
No,
it's not a technical issue. It's your audio.
No, because it doesn't usually do it.
Maybe there's a cancellation thing that's not working. Has it changed because you've got headphones? Have you got monitoring on? Can you hear yourself?
No.
Ah, right. That's maybe what it is.
Oh, hang on a minute. He's got the headphones in, hasn't he? So it's not doing the noise cancellation.
Yeah, that's what it is, yeah.
No, but it wouldn't do that on me, because I'm not coming through the...
No, but it does set levels and stuff as well.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Sorry, no, it's just very noticeable, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just aware of how annoying it is to watch a video where that's happening, so...
Do you know what? Once we can get past this bit, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's just that Hamish pointed it out. That's the problem.
Well, it is. People are going to...
Hang on, one sec. I've just put noise suppression on, so...
That's it.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
That's
okay.
It.
Cool.
All right, okay. Mystery solved. Yeah.
It's like... It must be a... Well, no, never mind. Let's not get...
So just to be clear, you can't hear me breathing now?
No, I mean, it comes through in the noise cancer a little bit, but it's nowhere near what it was.
Yeah, like, nowhere near what it was. It was like a constant. It was a sort of low-level Darth Vader thing going on for a little while, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind
sorry,
of...
Sorry,
yeah.
Do carry on. So we were talking about...
we were on
trade stuff. Yeah.
Trade stuff. Okay, anyway.
Wars, yeah, there's so an economy in the solar system is where we were at.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, do we know offhand how many satellites and asteroids and things that are manned? Like how many individual societies there are?
I don't think there's a specific mention of it. We hear about some of the bigger ones. That's about it.
Are we talking dozens or hundreds?
I mean, there are independent things going on, so you know.
I would imagine hundreds. But...
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe not on the scale of like Ceres or whatever.
That's a huge engineering operation to get something like that going. But
all right.
ones that are on the surface of moons are you know, how do you define one versus a group or whatever as well? So
I'm thinking more like how many Tycho sized towns or bigger are there? Shall we say, or Eros sized towns, or you know?
I think that's got to be in the.
Tens.
I mean, I'm completely guessing. Yeah. Maybe up to somewhere around 100, something like that.
Yeah, it's hard to tell because, like I say, there's a lot of engineering involved in keeping something like that going. So maybe not that many.
And because it's
maybe
essentially
just a few, you know, because
like the belt exists as an immense like mining operation. Like a lot of them they're basically nomadic, right? They drop their stuff off, but they live in space, really.
Okay, permanent settlements, I guess.
I mean, I think it's hard to tell.
I mean, there must be
something in the order of throughout the whole show, probably only we hear about a dozen or so.
But there must be millions of belters, otherwise they wouldn't be a threat to anyone, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
you know, at least many millions of belters.
Would most of them do? Are they like countries? Would it be like the same number as maybe countries then? So there'd be.
I don't know exactly what your point is. What you're trying to quantify.
I'm just trying to understand how comprehensible the in-story universe is. So does like do people know the names of all of the major settlements?
All the major ones, I would think, yeah, because there won't be that many. It'll be moons that are usable and major asteroids. That'll be the big ones that are sort of registered settlements. Is that what you're asking about? Like registered like towns?
Space. I mean, there'll be space stations as well. Like
yeah, there will be.
I mean, what, like we've already had Tycho and the one that they stormed to get the scientists. So I imagine there's a lot of that kind of stuff.
Chris has turned into a big purple sea.
Is he frozen?
It's kind of, you know, relevant in some ways, I can see, but...
Here he is.
Hello.
Oh, that's cool. Sorry. We can see the whole background at the moment.
Oh, right, yeah.
No, you don't need to move. I can see the whole thing, yeah.
That's the...
Because we're four squarish.
Four force ghost. Right. Can I kick myself?
I don't know. Can you kick yourself? It usually goes after a few seconds anyway.
You'll be kicking yourself.
Yeah. I'm still not entirely sure what your point was there.
Basically, is it how many moons has Saturn got? Like 17 or something?
Oh, more than that, yeah.
Like 20?
Oh, God, hang on. Now you're asking.
Okay.
I mean, you've got Jupiter's moons as well.
Right, that's quite a lot of moons.
Yeah, Saturn's known satellites.
All satellites aren't moons, right? Like a satellite is just anything that's...
No, a moon. Well, a moon and a satellite. I mean, a natural satellite is a moon. So,
it's got to be a certain size. But I mean, the moons of Saturn and Jupiter do vary between, you know, something that would be, you know, about the size of a town to something that's the size of a planet, you know.
I just wanted to say that the point is that the solar system has... Saturn's got 146 known.
Fucking hell.
And that's right now. But what I was going to say is you'll find that given the age of the solar system... These are stabilized things, and so it's not going to vary wildly. I mean, it's a kind of a, and the size will vary, but it's a case of the orbits being cleared.
Okay, cool.
That's why our moon exists and other, you know, because they have over time been the survivor. It's kind of an evolutionary thing, you know. They're the thing that managed to survive and either swept up everything else, knocked it out of the way, or accreted into it.
That's how it all works. So we can in theory create a moon.
In theory, but you'd have to be pretty accurate. The main ways of things existing as a satellite, natural satellite, are the big ones: accretion, which is where lots and lots of little things come together. And the density, when there's enough of it, the density crushes it into make a terrestrial moon like ours eventually. And then that can sweep up other things, knock them out of orbit, or they'll crash in and become part of the mass and all that. But a lot of the things that you see, a lot of the large asteroids that we see are quite, they're not very dense. Because it's basically a collection of smaller rocks together that have just, you know, gravitated and survived. So natural satellites vary wildly from being like basically captured asteroids to properly accreted.
Our moon, like, we don't really know with our moon, but the best theory for our moon was something big crashed into the Earth. And it's the remnants of the big thing that crashed into the Earth plus the remnants of the bit of Earth that
there's a few theories on it.
It's just, all I think is it's absolutely amazing that God managed to do this in 10,000 years. Busy boy.
It has been busy.
No, I mean, set it all up in 7 days. Well, six, because he took one off.
Lazy bastard.
Wow. So,
why would God need a day off?
I think that was just a hint that we should.
Oh, I understand the symbolism and the, you know, it's a story for humans by humans by privileged male white, well, not white mostly, but privileged male humans. Yeah. Anyway,
but so this episode,
this episode of our podcast is the most shambolic one so far. I'm just gonna say, like, I love it, but.
Yeah, well, we got the snow, we got the spot on your arm, we got peanut,
dog, me breathing,
yeah, my light in, my internet going out.
Yeah, stop breathing, like, Drew. Come on, for goodness' sake.
I'm so sorry.
It's like it's like you're always doing it, for fuck's sake.
Also,
anyway, okay, what was the point of asking about? I've forgotten. I now know the point of what you might have been getting at initially. What was the point of asking how many moons there were? You think that every single one of them's in use?
I just want to. I'm just trying to get my head around how comprehensible the character, how much of the universe, the solar system, effectively the in-show universe, how much of that the characters know and are aware of. And I guess I'm likening it in my head to, like, countries where people obviously know the big countries like China, USA, you know, even like France, Germany, that, you know,
but France, then, like, even France,
even France,
sorry French ghosty.
But, like, people don't necessarily know, like, where St. Vincent and the Grenadines is, or St. Martin's.
Yeah,
or,
you there's know, going like, to be yeah, things yeah. like that going on. I agree.
I imagine it's similar, yeah. For the average person living in that world, their knowledge of all the
If you're an Earther or a Martian, well, actually, the Martians are an interesting different because they're a bit more socially aware, I would say.
Thank you.
but yeah, I mean, only the major stuff's going to come up. I mean, again, unless you know, somewhere's only got like a few tens of people living on, say there's a mining an asteroid being mined, right? Okay. But it's not a big enough concern that some corporation wants in on it, but a few miners can mine it out in a couple of years, just and then move on.
Cooperative.
yeah, then that's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be counted as such. But, I mean, as for him, I mean, the asteroid belt contains thousands of asteroids.
Yeah, so, okay.
But also, humans have got to get to somewhere and back. So there is also the logistics of it. But, from what we know of the solar system in the show... Yeah, we only know a couple of dozen places, probably. And even then, a lot of them are to do with Earth or Mars in the first place, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry, we've okay, labored that's... this point and okay, never yeah. actually got to what your point was.
Oh, no, I made my point. So we're
okay, let's move on then.
Okay. Another general question about the universe is I noticed that Miller seems to only have one set of clothes, and I want to know how he keeps them clean, if indeed he does. Like, do you have, like, laundry facilities? Does he have to, like, go Starkers when he wants his clothes clean? Or is there, like, a laundry service where you can, like, walk in, there's a laundry service and a shower all in one?
See, now I want to rewatch from the beginning and check whether he is actually wearing the exact same clothes or whether they're just similar.
Yeah, I disagree. I suspect he has a couple of changes of clothes.
Yeah, and well, like me, I've got like 100 black t-shirts.
The thing is, I would, if it was just black, I would sort of not really register it. But it's a navy blue shirt and black kind of like almost jeans, you know, like khakis, jeans, sort of like just normal trousers, as it were. Right.
I'm glad we're getting into the important stuff about this show.
Yeah. But also, he has the earthen style collar, maybe similar to his hat. But, like, is it the earth collar? You know, this is not an earth collar.
That might not necessarily be. I see what you're saying, but, like, other belters, like, mostly, as we've said, kind of live in space. So they're wearing, like, overalls and spacesuits. Whereas he's lived his entire life in an atmosphere. He's
a city belter, I think is what he says.
Yeah, I love that line. Like, I'm an indoor
cat. More of a city belter. Yeah.
But also, because the collar's interesting, because Fred Johnson does not. He has the granddad shirt collar, which is. I love those shirts, by the way. It's hard to actually find them.
Yeah.
But they're really kind of cool, and most people tend to wear them. Even Aaron Wright, he wears them in a more buttoned up, smarter fashion. But it's like in a post-tie world, and I feel like ties, I think they're starting to come back, but they disappeared over COVID, and I think they're kind of staying as an optional component for a while.
I'd like ties to fuck off.
I kind of think I would, but also I think I'd like the standard suit that goes along with them to fuck off too.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
like if you just have like a black or navy blue suit and a white shirt and it doesn't have a tie, it looks like it's missing something, or it looks very bland.
And the collar without a tie looks odd, maybe just because we're used to it, but
well, I don't necessarily, yeah, like I don't necessarily, it's the whiteness of it. You're expecting a tie to be there, because I like that a tie adds a bit of color to the to an otherwise drab uniform. But like if you're gonna get rid of the tie, I think like have a bit of color or go black, you know. But then if you wear the black
then you
shirt,
might never go back.
Yeah.
I was trying to find a way to say that that didn't seem dodgy. Yeah.
Well, how, well to be honest,
I'll be the dodgy one.
On a way, like I mean, isn't it odd that so many people in the Discord room actually just all wear black all the time, like, but aren't goths? Like, you know, I think Ghosty does.
I think it's a nerdy thing, really.
I think nerds are more inclined to, well, used to be, before they started putting plastic fucking tat everywhere, but to utilitarianism, and it's a very utilitarian color. I mean, Linux users in particular. No, yours isn't tat. Yours is contextually what, and like useful stuff. And
it's not merchandise. It's, yeah, you know.
It's not anime dolls.
Yeah, yeah, or the
there are a couple of Daleks back there.
That's okay. I'll
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
well, and most of my stuff back here. I mean, you can't see it now. It's actually homemade. It's stuff people have made for me.
You made some of it yourself. I've noticed as well. Moving on, because I'm.
Okay. Hang on. I've got my anime doll in the background.
What is that?
Virgin Mary.
My Jesus that I got for my first Holy Communion.
Oh, right. Okay.
He's supposed to be doing this, like the Jesus sign. But these two fingers broke off, so he's doing a black power salute.
Nice one, Jesus. Nice one.
I'm gonna say one thing now and hope that we stay on track with it, because you're on a deadline time wise, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
You said you're a hard deadline.
Hard out of midday.
So we have spent 45 minutes and we've only mentioned I think two or three little points. We've gone like way tangenty within the show. And
I mean, to be fair, Chris is right that like the only event really is the thing that happens at the end.
There's a second what? Event has hit the towers.
Oh, wow.
Oh, come on. It's been like 25 years.
I loved it. It's fine.
I don't mind. I'm just thinking other anyway. People might.
Okay. So, all right. Jules-Pierre Mao has worked
Jules-Pierre
out.
Jules-Pierre Mao.
Jules-Pierre Mao. Sorry, Ghosty. Has worked out basically Avicerella's plan.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes a total lot of sense, because he is a bit of a brain box, isn't he? Like, you don't get that far ahead in life without being able to...
Without inheriting a lot of wealth.
Inheriting a lot of wealth. But also, I mean, I don't know. Is he? Like, I mean, obviously... I don't think
he's as clever as he thinks he is.
No, I don't think so either. I think
okay.
I think it's probably with the information he has, it's probably quite transparent what's happening. Whereas Erin Wright's like closer to it, and I think it's harder for him to see.
Okay, all right. Because I'm getting
Erin Wright thinks he's a lot more important than he is.
Oh, Erin Wright,
Because Jean-Pierre Mao does the usual capitalist, like anti-government libertarian thing of like, oh, the government's so fucking stupid, like can't think, you know. Which I don't think is fair to Erin Wright. Like, you know, he's very close to it.
And... I don't know. Like, actually, I don't think he's wrong in this particular instance. Man has not proven to be in any way a decent leader of the UN. The general that walked out of the meeting was not being politically adept in that
Admiral.
Moment. He was being Admiral.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. But Avicerella.
No, Avicerella is. He points out that Avicerella is like the one smart person in a tank of idiots, right? And I don't think he's that far wrong. He's obviously, I don't know, he's been a bit like hyperbolic or everything like that. But like at the end of the day, like...
I mean, political leaders, are, the people who get to the top are often fucking idiots.
But also the thing about one of the, like there's a few, like I think there's a few skills that help billionaires, right? One of them is knowing...
Billions like, of pounds and dollars.
Well, but like... You know, we do know billionaires that have squandered shit tons of cash. And there have also been like members of the aristocracy throughout history that have basically drunk and gambled away their, you know, ancestral wealth. So, like, obviously, like, billionaires are taught from a very young age how to keep a hold of their wealth and how to manipulate it. But one of the skills that billionaires learn is, of course, how to exploit people and knowing who's exploitable, knowing who they can sort of bring into the fold to make use of their skill. Well, I'm basically coming up with different words for exploiting. But, like, being a good exploiter is sort of a talent in and of itself, right? And, like, he probably does have a good lay of the chessboard to a degree, you know.
I think Aaron Wright is actually quite smart. I think man who's president is idiot, but
yeah.
You've not really seen him much. Avicerella and I think Aaron Wright are very smart. I do think it's just Xu Piaomao has way more info. He knows everything that's going on at this point. Like everything.
Yeah, but so position himself in that position also probably requires some kind of adeptness, right?
Well, no, it requires owning all of those companies where the information is coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't make any effort to do it.
But he could also own Beanie Babies, you know, like it doesn't matter. Like,
we all know you're a filthy capitalist apologist.
Yeah. Well, I'm Mr. UN, aren't I? I'm basically man.
You are.
But I think, and maybe I'm just being dazzled by Jules Pierre's, you know, charisma or something like that. I think Aaron Wright is an idiot, and I think this episode kind of outlines it, where he gets a bit desperate. It's like, you need us, come on, dude, come back.
He's definitely desperate, and there's something quite he's grasping, like he's a selfish, you know, like, yeah. And that gets him into trouble. But I think he's smart, but maybe more evidence with that will come later. I think right at the point you're at, it's a fair assessment.
Yeah, yeah, and also his suit is fucking delightful. Right?
How delightful. Let's see it then, come on.
Okay, all right.
I can see you were fiddling with your background.
Yeah, it is. Can you see, is this one, can you see it there? Oh, balls. he's there, hang on.
I'm going to put the kettle on while we're looking at his suit. Now we've got the earbuds, I can't hear you with the kettle. So
okay.
Be right back.
But we don't, I guess that one works. I don't want a close-up.
I need to send Drew one of those big stretcher cables for extending his headphones.
All right, I'll try and get him.
We could say Drew is a bit of a... Oh, never mind.
Oh, my... Oh.
Does that...
It's unbelievable.
No, I'm saying I need to send you one of those. I've got like these coiled up stretchy cables for extending audio, and I need to send you one or send you the link for one or
that'd be something. Cool. Yeah.
Anyway,
he's
almost there. He's kind of got this cool patterned fabric with no lapels, right? Pattern. It's basically a lapel-less jacket.
I can't really see a pattern.
It might be the compression or something.
Yeah,
I don't know where. Don't you sometimes see people from sort of like West Asia wearing a suit of that kind of
thing? Yes, like the, yeah. I, to be honest, I think I know them as granddad shirts, but like collarless button-up shirts. They are quite a lot.
No, I mean the suit as well, the suit without the lapels.
I mean, you get the Nehru suit, I think it's called, like
Nehru jackets. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they look cool. And it's a cross between them and the sort of the Western more military style suit. Although actually saying that, I guess the Nehru suits are kind of also based on military, just different militaries, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I really like it, and if we're going to ditch the old suit and tie, that would be what I would want to ditch it for, something.
Well, I haven't had a suit and tie for a long time, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're overdone, aren't they? I mean, the only people I notice that are still wearing suits and ties...
Salesmen?
Estate agents and lawyers.
You mean dodgy buggers then?
Dodgy buggers, yeah. People who are actually trying to paint some kind of image.
I don't think I've ever trusted people who wear suits. But that's a lot to do with my, that's, you know, actual experience of people, specific people.
Yeah. To be fair, yeah. Like, I mean, as you say, a lot of dodgy people wear suits, especially nowadays, where since COVID, the suit has definitely been a lot more optional. And even politicians, I don't see politicians wear suits unless they're basically going to be on TV.
I mean, the suit is the uniform of the oppressor.
Yeah.
In the capitalist relations, you know, it's bosses, bosses and above.
Yeah. And also, it's based on, you know, like a lot of suit design is based on military uniforms. So there is that kind of like the corporate world is a battlefield.
Hugo Boss.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Mormons, though, I know you were looking forward to the Mormons being kicked off the Naboo scene.
Yes.
That was Miller. Turns and that, doesn't he?
Yeah. But he does say, and I think he believes this, he does say, this is God's plan, or this is part of God's plan for the Mormon. Yeah.
Well, you see, that's the thing I was trying to sort of articulate in the last episode, is that Miller has... I mean, it's not really, it's obviously Miller's journey in his own head that's bringing him to where he is. It's not any God or spirits or anything that's involved.
How do we know God is not working through him?
Sorry, I completely
justify stuff.
I've got a point. Right, so all that stuff about God that was building to a point. I've just remembered what it was, and also the coming together stuff. Right, because is it possible that Julie Mao, after she died or got encrusted into the proto molecule.
Are you waiting for a 3-day gap? Is that what you're saying?
Well,
that's the second time we've talked about things being encrusted in this waking period for me. Hamish was talking about, I believe, a honey crusted vagina earlier.
Honey crusted pubic hair.
Oh right. My God! Don't. That's disgusting.
It was Danny's fault. Danny was doing shenanigans.
Oh my God! Blame it on the lesbian, why don't you?
She'll have to watch this episode now.
You reacted very strongly to that.
Yeah, unusually strongly. Like,
I don't. This is not the type of conversation I wanted to have on International Men's Day. Anyway, the thing was...
What about in your beard or in your head hair?
I mean, I don't like my hair being encrusted in any capacity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but you could crumble bits off and eat it. It's just like crystallized.
Oh, don't make it worse.
Yeah, crystallized sugar, isn't it?
So, is it possible that Julie Mao is, in fact, in a very real but also spiritual way, a part of Miller? Maybe it's not romantic or in love, in the romantic sense, but is a kind of like a spiritual joining of two souls or minds in a way that's like they align with a cause or they align with a goal, or the spirit of Julie is piggybacking on Miller to further her
ideology. That is essentially my theory. But I would say watch the next episode.
Yes.
Okay. Because I think this does get... I feel like this does get a bit spiritual, to be honest.
Also, when I was joking about God acting through Miller, but I just remember, you know, the bird is the thing that arrives every time he's on a new sort of trajectory. And, you know, the bird is literally the symbol for the Holy Spirit.
Come on, her name's Julie. But... Come on.
Sorry, what?
Oh.
No, I know what you mean. What kind of bird was it? It wasn't a hummingbird, was it?
I think it's a sparrow. It looked like a sparrow. Mm. But yeah, the Holy Spirit in art is represented by a bird. So there's symbolism there for sure. But what I meant when I say Miller means what he's saying, when he says this is part of God's plan, I don't think he necessarily means it literally. I think he just means this is for the greater good.
I think what he means is this is. I think he might be a believer in destiny.
I think he means this is for the good of humanity, and you know,
it almost feels like, look, if you knew what I knew, you'd be on board with this. Your God would want us to do this because we can build another Naboo.
If you have compassion for people, then you would, you know, as religious people,
are supposed to have.
I think I hope that once. Okay, I'm. I hope. Well, I was going to say, but I'm sort of speaking from a position of known ignorance here. But I would have hoped that if they'd have chucked Eros into the sun and everything had been hunky dory, although that feels like it would have taken a long time to get Eros into the sun.
So that's
why they were talking about sealing up the airlocks and. you know.
Yeah,
that's like, why they're new. That's why they're nuking
and
the
nuking
surface
the surface
to make it,
and stuff. Yeah,
basically, it very hard to get into. It'd still be possible, but
yeah.
I
would hope that they'd sort of, you know, explain everything to the world in an honest way, because it's like, I get why.
I'm not sure Miller would give a crap about that, but I think that generally, the reasons would be outed afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah,
it tends to be the Belters who want to get, because they've got that anarchistic kind of society. It's the Earthers and the Martians who are like, no, people got to be trusted with this information, and it's the Belters who are like, no, we just need to put this information out there.
Yeah, and tell everybody why, what's happening and why, and
But we do learn a little bit about the danger. Like, so I think since I watched the episode for the first time, I think a lot about the humanitarian mission going on with with French Ghostie, right? Partly because it's like, are they really humanitarian missions, right? Like, we get some clues. We know that this is actually quite a fancy ship for a rental. Now, a humanitarian mission.
I'm going to butt in for a moment and say, you have that dude on French Ghostie, you have seen him before on a TV broadcast in the background.
Okay, all right, yeah.
And he was, I can't remember what situation, I think it was when the riots were going on or something, and he does seem to be a legitimate, like, peace wanter.
Okay, because it does kind of make sense that humanitarian missions would have rentals rather than just owned spaceships, because, like, I would imagine that various humanitarian missions require different equipment for different things, very specifically at very different times.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's not the Red Cross or something.
Yeah, I've lost the thread of this here. What are we talking about?
The French guy that was found on Eros, or the French.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
French Ghostie.
So because it's like
Dr. French Ghostie.
Medicine Sans Frontières type thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Or like Doctors Without Borders or something, right? Like,
that's the same thing.
Oh, is it? Is it just in different? Okay. I think, is it that, or is it a cover? Because, like, as you say, as you're alluding to, that it's not a cover. But I think Amos or Alex or someone says this is a
That's when they're assuming it's pirates. They say this is a weird ship for pirates. It's got a med bay. It's got all these medical things, which which means legitimately it makes sense that there's no reason to think that's anything but a humanitarian medical. They're genuinely concerned about. They think what's happening is they think people at the Earth or Mars is experimenting on these people and they want to go in and help them.
But that
whole situation, I think that whole scene is it's interesting because there's like Holden does a horrible thing, but it's the right thing in that situation.
They get to that in the show themselves, don't they?
Well, the thing is, they give them so many warnings But at the same time,
it's not unreasonable for the dude to be suspicious. Like, if Mars is doing this and trying to cover it up, and then at the last minute he says, oh, I'm not Mars, I'm Holden, like, you know, would you trust, you know, if the American military said, come to us, we'll keep you safe, you don't mess with that.
But then also at the same time, it's like, if you are potentially carrying back a new disease... You could be wiping out millions. Yeah. And is he, like,
yeah, this is the thing, is they don't seem to. Yeah, the sort of, they are torn between suspicion and duty, really, aren't they? That's what it is. Mm. And they almost screw it up, so they have to be shot down. Yeah.
It's just a situation where there's no trust and there's no way to establish trust.
Yeah.
I guess so. It's sort of like, I don't know what could be a good outcome, because obviously the story's told from the Ross Nanty's point of view. If it was like an American sort of black ops operation or Martian, you know, like in this case where Mars are known as a you know, there is.
I don't know if you notice, but that whole scene starts with, but towards the beginning of that scene, when Holden asks for the target lock, and Alex says, "We're not going to shoot them, are they?" And Holden goes, "Don't mind, we're not shooting anybody. Like, don't be ridiculous. We're not shooting anybody," kind of thing. And it starts with that and ends with Holden having to shoot somebody down, which is the last thing Holden wants to do.
Yeah. I mean, I know.
Yeah, he's trying to, because everybody knows. Well, we know from experience of the show that if a ship target locks another ship, your sensors tell you.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's kind of a look. We're ramming our guns at you. We can fire something that's going to destroy you right now. Please pay attention. Please listen to us.
They contact them immediately as soon as the target lock happens. The French ghostie radios the Rosinante.
Yeah. Because, like, if it is a black op, you're probably thinking we're done for anyway, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm trying to remember if I'm remembering this right. Don't they abandon their own guy in the first place?
Yeah.
So they're aware
that he's dead, and they're aware. French Ghostie describes the thing coming at them like it's got a consciousness, so they know there's something fucking dodgy there.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that always made me think, well, why do they persist then if they abandon their own guy, they know it's bad enough that they can't do something for him? What makes them think they can do something for anybody else?
It's a wee bit confusing. I think they are just scared
and confused at that point.
A little bit.
They know that they're not infected because the dude went out and died where he went. He didn't go out and come back, probably. Holden doesn't know that well enough to let them go, they probably think they're okay and they can just get away, but
I think that's more of it. I think more, yeah, they're sort of scared and trying to get away from the situation, but they, if they just waited at least and let them check them out, but then you know, fear, mistrust,
they've got no reason to trust
Rosinante.
And also,
I do feel Holden should have led with, I'm Holden.
Well, that's it, he's already sort of infamous, in the belt as it is, you know.
Oh.
There you go. That will get us 100 extra views.
That's the thumbnail.
God, our minds went straight to the same place there, didn't they?
You two are such modern people when it comes to
I mean, thumbnails have been a thing since
mine are rotten. Mine is just whatever it comes up with.
Since monkeys evolved.
Yeah, pretty much. <laughs>
Very good.
So on a utilitarian point of view, it's like hundreds of thousands of people basically dead on Eros or known to be dead. Mm. What's one more?
Which is awful, Holden is correct to, like, he has to, because if that ship is infected, like, he wasn't lying.
Yeah, remember, he's obviously thinking along the lines of the Anubis.
Yeah,
I mean, they destroyed the Anubis.
But worth noting that even if they had nudged Eros into the sun, they've still got that sample.
Mm.
Well, that comes up in the show as well, and Miller knows about it because him and Naomi talk about it. You know,
also that's the
famous smashing ass scene.
This is I guess a little bit of a callback to actually the very first episode where the knight goes searching. An unknown vessel. And it's like, that could have been the knight.
Yep,
you know, like,
could have been.
You know,
That's a really good point, actually.
I wonder if that comes into Holden's head. You know,
it has to, right?
That was us a few months ago.
You know, they did a generally an ill-advised but humanitarian thing.
Yeah.
And you know what if the stealth ships that took them out or took out the Cant were fundamentally doing the same thing that the Rosinante is doing now?
I mean, they weren't. I mean, they were literally entrapped. But yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, it's an echo. Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, I don't know. It could have. I mean, it could have been the case that they looked at the Cant and they, for some reason or another,
they lured them in. That's the difference. They lured them in.
That was a deliberate thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, it could be. Were they lured in because the Cant was mining from somewhere where there just happened to be some proto-molecule?
I don't think that's...
No, it's not true. It's like, that's not...
I know what you mean, yeah.
They were in transit at that point.
Yeah, but
everything
they,
else
like...
the stuff had happened slightly before. I think there's a little bit of a time, not a confusion, but there's a bit more time there than you think. If you look back at it, you'll see what I mean. But carry on.
Okay. The crushing ass to dust scene. Yeah, because you I think you mentioned. Did you not? Did you think?
I thought it was the last episode. Yeah.
It's Diogo again.
Crikey, Spacewalk does look kind of insane, doesn't it?
It's terrifying.
Yeah, Diogo's like, "Way." He's been abandoned in space completely before, so yeah. He's pretty.
And he says when he walks out, he says, "Fresh air," and I do love that. I love that analogy or whatever. But I feel bad for Miller, who's never ever done this before. That looks fucking. I've done that kind of thing in video games, and it's terrifying in video games. Doing it for real, just being too fast as you come in, horrible.
Do you know? Have you seen? I don't. I've got a video on the polar bear where I play Descent 3, and it's the first of the Descent games where it opens up into the sky. I could not handle that.
I remember. Yeah,
it's just like. It's I don't know what it is to me, but it just triggers something, some kind of like super agoraphobic. I'm not like particularly agoraphobic. You know, I'm fine going outside. I love going outside. But
I think it's that one of those things that's deep in our brain because they use it differently in Oblivion and Fallout 3. It's when you emerge from the sewers or you emerge from the vault. There's like and it's a hope. It's different. It's hopeful, but it's like it's a powerful moment in both of those games in the opposite way. So it's clearly something that's deep in our psyche.
Is it coming out of the ocean? Is it emerging from caves? Or is it,
it's like
people talk about that being like if you go to like the desert or something. They talk about that being mind altering
and sea as well, being at sea and just like nothing forever. Yeah.
I love being at sea. It's great.
It terrifies me. I know when I've been on a ferry to the Isle of Wight, right? So I'm not talking about like grand sea voyages, and that I was fucking terrified.
Yeah, no, I've only been like here in France. You know, it's not.
That's a lot further than I've been. I got to the point where you can't see land in either direction, and that is fucking terrifying.
See, I find that kind of exciting.
Yeah, I'm not built for that.
So it's for me, it seems to just be either that specific game, like in space, like it's that's.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing you're talking about: how many settlements there are in the solar system or whatever. Earlier, it's like how big is space? I mean, even just from here to the asteroid belt, the difference in sort of distance between Earth and the Sun. Or the Sun and Earth, and then Earth and Mars, and then Earth and the asteroid belt. You've got to remember, these are ever-increasing concentric circles, ellipses of orbits.
I've almost come to the realization that it is incomprehensibly big.
Yeah, right? Douglas Adams tells you about that in The Hitchhiker's Guide. Yeah, it's really big.
Yeah, like my brain, it hits a biological ceiling of what you can imagine.
Exactly,
because there's no evolved purpose to know things that big. It's maybe the sea. Even the sea is bigger than I know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you think about like the Atlantic Ocean or something.
The longest I've been on a ferry is about 7 hours, and
where were you going?
It's just I don't know, I can't even remember now. It's to France, somewhere in France.
7 hours. Wow.
There are some long ferries to. Yeah, the one that goes Dover to Calais is pretty short, but I think there are ones that go from like maybe not Cornwall, but over in that direction to.
I suppose
Weymouth or something. I can't remember now exactly. It was a long time ago, but it's 7 hours, and like that's a long. Because it was going, I couldn't pin that on a map. or I couldn't like.
I mean, the kind of bravery that's required, like, you know, the sailors who, when we weren't entirely sure, I mean, they were, but like we didn't have proof that the world was round, and they went on, you know, they went out into the ocean just to find land in a particular direction. That is insanely brave. And like the Apollo crews, you know, the first one going to the moon, like, it's not that it's the degree of bravery. I think it's a very specific kind of bravery to be able to cope with that degree of being away from everything that you know.
Yeah, like I always kind of feel
But that isn't that, just to go back to that, isn't that one of the reasons that Neil Armstrong was chosen? Is that he was a very special man. I mean, I think to my mind, I don't really believe in heroes as such, but I think Neil Armstrong was probably the last hero that I've felt was worthy of the title, you know?
Yeah,
he was so capable, and he also had the right mindset, and he was also level-headed. Him compared to Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong was he was a better choice for a lot of things.
Unflappable.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that caused problems in his personal life, where he was like unemotional. You know, these things go together, I think.
He's called Neil Armstrong. He's not going to be a. He's not. I mean,
it's a name on a par with like Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's. I know George Lucas chose it because it's Lucas.
Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't even know.
But it's not. It's not Keith Nobly knees, is it?
Well, Buzz Aldrin. I mean, come on.
Buzz Aldrin. That's a hero name
as
well.
That's a hero name as well.
Yeah. Did they Michael just choose Collins. Them on hero names?
Yeah. That's why they left him up on the.
They left him in orbit. It's like, Mike, you're not heroic.
I may have mentioned this before. I do recommend NASA's got the whole audio recording from that entire mission, and you can listen to the whole thing. And I did it over like a weekend or something, and it's amazing. So also, Michael Collins gets quite pissy that he's not getting any media attention because he's just in the orbiter, which is quite funny.
That's just sad. Also, that would never happen with fucking SpaceX, would it? Like releasing the full.
I know Hamish is well aware of this, but Chris might well be. But like, just for the audience, like the fucking Apollo mission. It was a tinfoil little fucking thing that they were sitting in. So they went up on the rocket. They went out on the, you know, the shooty thing. They went to the moon. They detached from the orbiter. The orbiter carried on around the moon. They landed on the moon. Then they took off, which was fucking hard. And then they took off from the moon again, reconnected to the orbiter, and then went home. Like, just if you're just looking at that as like you've got to face that thinking like I've got maybe a 10% chance of coming home.
Yeah, they didn't think the chances were amazing.
They certainly
didn't think success was guaranteed by any stretch.
I'm going to be dead. I don't know how far away the moon is, but hundreds of thousands of miles. Anyway, I'm going to be dead. Like,
it's,
not even on the same planet that every single one of my ancestors are buried on. I'm going to be the first person who's dead.
That's kind of cool, though. I mean,
it's cool, but insane at the same time. It's mad.
See, the way that you just described that makes me want to go to Mars. Like, I'm not a big space guy, but I'm like, do you know what? First person to die on Mars. Sign me up.
First person to fuck on Mars would be
What about both?
Well, you need two people to, you know. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's a simultaneous thing, you know.
People reach around.
Still two people involved, but you know.
Up your own arse is what I'm trying to get at.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right.
I mean, it's about a quarter of the distance to the sun. We know that.
That's
insane. So it's two.
Sorry, what is?
The moon from the Earth is
is the quarter of the distance to the sun?
Yeah. And it's
Mars, right?
No, the moon.
Earth to Mars. Really?
Hang on, you're saying the distance from the Earth to Moon is a quarter of the distance of the Earth to the Sun? That can't be right.
What? Hang on, I'm confusing myself now.
Yeah. What are you saying?
No, it's not a quarter. It's no. No, I'm talking about the size. Why we get eclipses? Sorry, I'm confusing two things. It's 240 million miles ish.
That's a big number.
But it's 93. 240,000, sorry. Sorry, to I'm yeah, this yeah to the moon, and it's 93 million to the sun.
Right, right, yeah.
But the relative sizes give us almost exactly the right size for everything.
Yeah.
Sorry, I shouldn't have done anything with numbers at this point of the day.
Do you find it really weird how much stuff lines up kind of perfectly with the Earth, the moon, and the sun? Because it's like the moon is rotating at the exact same speed so that it's facing the Earth all the way around, right?
Yeah.
And that's only
libration.
And
is that just a cosmic coincidence, or is there?
Yeah, well, obviously, it's yes. But that, unusual, the thing but... is, we spot these things. It's like why do humans exist? Oh, we must be special. That's that you're connecting things from a different point of view. You know?
No. It's proof of God. Checkmate, atheist.
I'm converted.
As a theist on the podcast, I have to hold my ground on that one.
Okay.
I mean, it just feels very... I mean, it does just feel very coincidental slash...
Yeah, but it's like... It's the point of like, oh...
We have one moon and it faces us all the way around. Name another planet happens.
I think it's a bit like saying... It's weird that we exist on the one planet that is suitable for sustaining life. What a coincidence.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit like that, which is, yeah.
I mean, yes, but also...
It's looking at it the wrong way around, basically. it's like how people think evolution works.
It's like what I'm saying about, like World War II granddads.
Yeah.
Well, so it's all survival
bias. All of our granddads survived World War II.
Yeah, but it's, I think, like...
Wouldn't have. Some might have had kids before they left. But again, get the point. Yeah. The point being...
Yeah, the average age was quite low.
Yeah. I mean, my granddad was, like, 16 or something. But the size things, like, I mean, I'm assuming that the moon is... I don't know, I don't...
It's the apparent size is obviously what I mean.
My
brain's...
Is that
essential
essential to life on Earth? Would we have still evolved without the moon?
Well, the moon gives us tides. And there is an argument that life would certainly be different without tides, but I think there are arguments that tides are almost necessary. Well, the problem is the tides are necessary for the way we evolved, and it's impossible
to know whether... Exactly, it's the way... Yeah. This is the thing, it's like, well... We need certain things to exist, or they exist. It's not the same as these things exist, and then we've arisen from it. You know, problem is magical thinking.
Yeah, we are the thing after the equal sign, but it's easy to think that we're the thing before the equal sign. Does that make sense?
Anyway, we're on a deadline here, so let's get back to the point.
Right, okay, so...
Right, let's run through the... Since the episode has only got one or two really big incidents, let's...
Mm-hmm. Okay, quickly, before we get away from Russell, I think I did enjoy Amos going bombs away. I've always wanted to say that.
Amos was a bit wry in this one.
It's funny, and it's funny that he laughs at Holden doing the sort of Captain Kirk or Picard type thing as well, you know. But he doesn't say anything about it or pick on him about it. Whereas sometimes he would be cheeky about things. You didn't the Navy teach you how to store your gear before you went? You know, he does that, but the other thing, he sort of gets it. And that's, again, this is Amos being more, empathetic. Yeah, maybe empathetic, actually.
I think it requires empathy,
To sort of go, oh, yeah, I get what he's saying. And he gets, I think Amos is having a bit of an adventure now.
He's enjoying himself.
He's enjoying.
Well, he doesn't. At least as much as other people, he doesn't experience fear, right? His experience of fear is far subdued compared to other people. Yeah, so for him, it's just like a video game, isn't it?
He's the Neil Armstrong of the team.
He's the Neil Armstrong. Yeah,
that's like Amos says that he's like, I like this plan. Like he makes it clear from the beginning. He's like, I'm totally on board with this.
He's having fun.
This is better than a stag do. This is like.
Oh, and also when I think this was the first time through, this made me laugh out loud. When Holden goes, it feels like we're covering up a crime. And Amos goes, yeah, that's exactly what it feels.
I mean, if it wasn't extra solar, it probably would be, right?
Yeah, there's probably no jurisdiction there that's agreed on by, yeah. But I mean, yeah, I mean, morally, they're all covering up a crime.
Yeah, I certainly can imagine how it feels like that. And actually, that's kind of a good way of, like, putting the audience into the head of the characters, just like that one line.
And also, it tells you that Amos has experience of committing crimes and covering them up. Yeah. Like,
we've all covered up a crime at one point in our life, right? Like,
well, we know you have.
Many crimes.
I've committed crimes, but I've never covered them up. I've never had.
Yes, you have. If you're using a VPN to torrent, you're covering up a crime.
I'm not using a VPN. So that's just coincidental. I'm happy to torrent without a VPN as well.
No, don't raw dog it. That's far too dangerous.
I've only ever had one letter. Anyway, back on track.
Hang on, you only need one letter, right? You get one shot across the bow, and then
I never signed up to Disney Plus, so they can't murder my wife.
Yeah. Anyway.
I love the Naboo going off as well. Like that's
pretty cool. Yeah, it's all that was much. That's probably as cinematic and sort of Star Trek-y, Star Wars-y as they get. Yeah. Actually.
Yeah. The little tugs. I love the little tugs. The swarm.
Oh, they were excellent. The swarm of tug cool. ships. Yeah, they were really cool. And the little radio chatter that goes with them and stuff.
I love that they're clearly a swarm. They're not all, because they don't go in neat, perfect lines. Mm. They just look for a gap and go there, kind of thing. Like they're all sort of autonomous,
like AI type of thing, where it's just
this will do.
Yeah. Also, I'm kind of liking that I'm recognizing some of the extra belters. They come back a bit.
They do reuse a lot of the same people, and it gives you a sense of continuity. Yeah. Well, remember those 25 people were on the pod that survived are special.
I'm recognizing some of the faces. Yeah. They're veterans. Well,
yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. But also the other guy that spends a lot of time with Diogo and Miller. Mm. He's been in it for a while as well, so
Yeah.
I think he's got a proper name and everything.
Is he the tall dude?
The taller one, tall... yeah.
Yeah,
he's a bit older as well.
Is he? I mean, he's not unhandsome. Hang on a minute. I think if it's the guy, I think you.
Yeah, if you get us a picture, I'll say what I'm thinking of.
He's kind of like handsome, like your type of handsome. Is it? Oh, hang on a minute. Why it zooms in too much? No, yeah. That's Miller. That's also Miller, handsome.
Yeah. Miller's very handsome.
Yeah. Oh, I can't, I'm not even going to do this dance anymore. I can't, like, if it's not in the dead center of the frame, I'm just not even going to bother.
Drop it in the Discord chat just so we can see.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't have the Discord chat open. But
I love that. This is us trying to be on track. I love it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well. Well, I mean, I think we're getting through it. Is the guy?
I mean,
next...
the important thing is the bit at the end. So,
yeah,
yes, yeah. I think he's very handsome. Yeah,
he's kind of got that rugged, you know.
Yeah.
Like sort of bear quality almost.
Diogo Harari rather is his full name. Diogo's.
Diogo's a bit unshakable, isn't he? Like he's.
He's got that teenage bravado, he's
meant to be. I think he's meant to be about 17. Did you? I mean, I should, when we first I mean, see
this, it's definitely a comic. It's a trope, right? The teenager who believes they can't die, who believes they're not necessarily intellectually believes it, but in terms of their behavior, And I don't know if everybody has. I definitely had it. I did some stupid fucking shit.
Yeah,
I should have died like many times.
I went, yeah, I used to drink a lot and then climb onto the roofs of houses. Like that.
I used to go drinking and I called it surfing. I would go home on the roof of the car. like I was surfing. I lost my hat.
You lost your hat.
I lost my hat.
Oh my God. Yeah. I got into some cars with some very drunk drivers. It's like.
Oh, yeah.
Like ridiculous, like stupid, like almost enjoyed the risk of it.
Which I do think if you live rurally is less bad. It's still bad, but it's less bad.
I mean, there wasn't any real risk of any. It's very unlikely that a person other than any of us in the car
you kill yourselves.
There.
Yeah, you wouldn't. Yeah.
In fact, there's one time where I was in a Citroen Saxo and it crashed into a Renault Picasso. The Saxo's axle came off. The Renault Picasso had a little dent in it. Is it a Renault Picasso? What's the Picasso? Is it?
That sounds right. Yeah, I think that's right.
It has,
Citroen?
Citroen. Maybe. From Picasso? It has Picasso. That was like their marketing gimmick, that it had handwritten Picasso on the
signature.
Side.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's family car. Yeah, I'll tell you what, if you're looking for a safe car, I mean, I don't know if they still make them now. I don't see many of them on the road.
Can we get a sponsorship?
Like, I mean, if they'll give me a Picasso, it's a bit bigger than what I usually drive. I like small cars.
You, was back it the track. Hairdresser car? Is that the
term? The hairdresser car,
is that
yeah,
the comment?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I like the I like a smart car, if I'm honest. I've never driven one, but I'd kind of like, I'd be into it.
I like small
it.
Cars. Yeah, small cars are cool. Oh, anyway,
in the country, it's, you know, people drive Land Rovers in the country, don't know how to live in the country properly. Unless you live on a farm, but like most of the time you're on a small car so that you can go around those country roads a bit quicker, you know? It's just like, yeah. You know. In fact, to be honest, the Citroen Saxo, pretty good car, despite the fact that it can't hold its own in a crash. Although I did see Crash testing on a smart car, and they're actually pretty good. They seem to have put stuff in it to like resist the assumption that a smart car would just get smashed up in a crash.
Yeah,
apparently they're quite sturdy. I don't know if that's because they're so small they have to be more sturdy because you've got less crumple zone or whatever. But anyway, if a smart car wants to sponsor me, I'll pick something up. You know,
I'm sure we get enough views to make it all worthwhile.
Oh yeah, you can get smart cars without a roof and like mini doors, like almost like a golf cart, but like a smart car. That I'd love to drive that in the summer.
You would just look like noddy.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, like. Yeah. Right. What else? The heartbreaking thing, of course, in this episode was Miller and the detonator, and they blew the scrap
yeah,
screwed the control panel, and like I knew it was going to happen. See, this is one of the things where it kind of dissipated some peril for me, because I knew Miller wasn't going to die,
mm-hmm.
and I also knew like what kind of monster at Miller's age would let like a 17-year-old, like you do let the 17-year-old go. It doesn't even matter who the 17, unless the 17-year-old is a specific Joffrey Baratheon kind of level of bastard.
Young Hitler.
Yeah. Then you, because the thing is, it's how many life years are you saving with this decision, right?
Yeah.
Like
a
17-year-old is likely to have at least 40 years of life left, whereas Miller, who's what, mid-50s?
Hang on, but are you saying you went into this situation confident that Miller wouldn't die because of plot armor?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
I still,
even when I rewatch, I still feel a sense of, I think I'm just very sort of gullible. I fall into stories very easily.
My heart sinks a little bit because it's almost like if it was real or if there wasn't plot armor, this would be like really sad. But it's like, look, I'm the fucking main character. You go. It's fine. You know what I mean? Like, it's like.
So at that point. Because it looks fucking dire at that point.
Yeah.
Did you think the Rocinante was going to zip in and save him, or?
I thought that was a possibility.
Yeah.
That would zip in and save him, but... Star Trek / Star Wars thinking.
Yeah.
Let's beam him off.
No, I just meant a ship that can go in and back out again without.
Yeah.
So, I think what was quite gripping about the whole scene is, in fact, actually the plot armor made it a bit more gripping, because. It was a bit like, I knew Miller wasn't going to die. I knew that he wasn't going to like leave Diego there. So I knew Diego was going to get back safely. Because even if they were kicking the trope a little bit, you know, of the invincible teenager. And also Diego's kind of lovable. Like, you know.
Diego, sorry.
And
Stars is the name of the other guy.
So what was really getting to me is like, how the fuck are they going to get? What's going to happen now? What's going to happen now? What's going to happen now? And again, the voices kept getting louder. It's like. So I thought it's going to have to be the Rocinante coming in and saving them. And they're like, and then Naomi says like he's dead. It's like, how the fuck is this going to resolve? and then this happens, and then the Naboo just shoots past. It's like,
and when in that moment when that happens, when you see Miller's perspective, and the Naboo goes. There's a weird noise that happens to that. But did you think the Naboo had diverted for some reason?
Yes.
Yeah,
I thought the Naboo had diverted. And maybe they'd come back around for another swing or something like that.
I think it's a very short time. But I think the first time I watched it, I think what went through my head is like, oh, Fred's betrayed them somehow. Fred wants the Naboo for himself. Something, and then it was like, oh, no, it's an Eros move.
I didn't even think that far ahead. I was like... I thought the Naboo was died. It had to be. And then when they said, "Oh, it's not the Naboo, It's I don't. It would have made it more perilous if they were like, okay, we're on course. There is no way this can go wrong. You know, if they added in a few extra like levels of reassurance, yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah. Okay, it's on the path. In we basically, this ship is so big we cannot move its trajectory now. Done.
That's what is happening. Yeah.
Yeah. If they said that a few more times, just to reaffirm that they can't, that the Naboo couldn't have just been swooped away. But it felt like the Naboo had swept away,
that's Star Trek stroke Star Wars thinking, that you're not thinking about the amount of energy and the time that it takes to do that.
Well, no, the Naboo does have a handbrake.
And also,
Fast
I don't know
and,
how
Fast and like, Furious actually.
Yeah, but like also the Eros might be quite small by comparison to the Naboo. It's like I don't, you know, I'm not thinking about that maths at that in that.
I get that.
But I love the emotion because it shows the. It's a lovely moment because you see the Rocinante crew just waiting for the Naboo to hit, and kill their friend, and like Naomi's crying. And then when they realize what's happened, they just look like fucking stunned. Yeah. Like, I mean, because essentially something impossible has just happened.
Well, yeah. That's it. It is physically impossible what happened.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean,
have they said that? No, maybe I might be. Yeah, I'll be careful what I say because you might be veering into the next episode.
I know what you're thinking.
I guess there's maybe a little bit of foreshadowing with the humanitarian mission where it's like, well, look, they let the humanitarian mission die for this mission. Or they killed the humanitarian.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, they can't suddenly just turn around and save Miller now, because that would be like.
I think they would have done had they had time. I think they literally just do not have time to get there and get back. I think if it had been within the realms of possibility, they would have gone for it. But
But also, I guess the explaining to the humanitarian mission. Hang on, there's this huge ship that's going to push this thing into the sun. Like. And it's like, nah, you're just, oh my God, that's not even a good lie, you know?
I mean, but it's also, you know, when the Naboo, assuming everything had gone to plan, when the Naboo hits Eros, like, it's not just going to go like, bump, bump. Like, it's going to be fucking, entire ship, including a big nuclear reactor, is going to fucking explode. Like, anybody in that vicinity is dead.
I was expecting more space snooker. Just like, fuck black.
Dave Cinzano Lister.
Yeah, so on. they didn't. This isn't a throwback to Red Dwarf, is it? Because hang on a minute. Just a side note, because I know we're running a bit out of time. Is Red Dwarf proper sci-fi? Because I kind of feel like it is.
But
they mix and match it very liberally.
I would say. I think even comedy sci-fi things, so long as they have sci-fi
it's
in them,
consistent. Then within itself.
I don't think it even needs... I would say Futurama is science fiction. I don't think science fiction has to be self-consistent. Because
it's not hard
comedy,
sci-fi. Yeah.
I mean, it's got hard sci-fi elements, ideas. Yeah,
but then other things in it are just like very, you know, completely hand wavy and, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but then that isn't there a little bit of all sci-fi that has at least a hand?
A little.
I think it's a matter of degrees.
It's a spectrum. Yeah.
Yeah, and are we operating on the principle that Star Wars is not a sci-fi? But like,
I think you can make both arguments, and I think they're both valid. So to say that it is, and to say that it, because it obviously in ways
space opera,
it's got spaceships. It's got, you know, it explains some of the science of how the spaceships travel. It happens in space, you know. It's
with full gravity, and
I mean, science fiction is really a difficult thing to define, isn't it? Really.
Yeah. I mean.
Also, we often think of science fiction as a space thing.
Mm.
Where there's a lot of, I mean, science is not just about physics and space and, you know, the biological.
But,
I mean,
but it's like,
look
if,
at
if
like
I,
the Andromeda Strait, oh, there is space involvement with that sort of. It's kind of weird.
Jurassic
Park is technically science fiction.
Yeah, it's science fiction, yeah.
Because it's about genetic manipulation. It's not.
That's definitely science. Solidly science fiction, yeah.
I mean, I've even heard arguments that Game of Thrones is science fiction, but that's.
I wish it had been.
It was originally going to be more science fiction-y before it was thrown into medieval fantasy.
I wanted that to be the Earth, and this is what I thought when I started reading the book. It was before the TV show. I thought the White Walkers were nanotech gone wrong.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Mm. Mm.
Could have been. I mean, kind of was.
Why they love the cold?
Yeah.
Magic
it's sort
wrong.
Of. Yeah. It's, yeah.
I
magic
see, I,
and science fiction.
I would read fiction by you, Drew, because I reckon you've got.
I can't do the in between bits.
Oh, you got ChatGPT now, haven't you? I did that just for Hamish's face.
That's there you go. Hamish's expression of the day.
This is just like ChatGPT. It's just like it's a trick. What do you call it? Not Pavlovian.
Yeah,
I was going to call it Malkavian then for a second.
He does become bear-like when he's pissed off, though. There is a like.
Bear with us.
Well, that, I mean, you know, don't call him polar bear. Actually, I do wonder where did the polar bear come from.
I thought I'd explained it to you on the show. Actually, how to.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. The covering the eyes?
No, covering the nose.
Cover the nose, that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Covering the nose? I don't get it.
Right. Oh, I thought you knew this. Right. Okay. Well, I don't mind telling the story again. It's an anticlimactic thing, but I'll tell it.
All good stories are.
There was a TV show back in the 90s called How To.
Ah, right.
Popular science show for sort of, I don't know, teenagers maybe. And it had Carol Vorderman was in it, and I don't remember who else was in it at the time. Fred, what's his face? Dinage? Is that wrong? I don't know. Can't remember.
I think that's right. That sounds right.
Anyway, the point is, they were saying polar bears have got great camouflage, except for their big, you know, big dark black nose. You know, so how do they hide in the snow? And the joke, you know, the sort of semi joke was they put their paw up over their nose so you can't see them. And this just tickled me and my mate so much that we were going around pretending to be invisible by doing that. And we became the polar bears. And that nickname has stuck since the mid-90s, early 90s, as my nom de guerre. Internet name, you know. DJ name, stage name.
See, it's not better than my Ludacris one, which is like,
no, that's great. That's a great
thing. Yeah, but Matt came up with it. It's not even my own creation.
Well, you know, we've got to hear it now. You've got to explain it.
Okay.
For
well, basically, Ludo is Esperanto for game. Chris is
Latin for game.
Oh, Latin. Well, Ludo is like game in a whole bunch of languages, right? Like Ludo just means game.
Yeah.
Like Ludo. So like Ludo, Chris. Ludacris.
Game Chris. I mean, I did a Linux gaming website. It was just called Ludic Linux. I was very proud of that name.
That, yeah.
Everybody else thought it was shit, but I love that name.
No, I thought it was good. Ludic Linux.
Okay,
good. I thought you were good, Drew, you know. It made sense to me.
Do you know, I always... thought that when we did Hex's Christmas videos, yours were all consistently the best, and I wish mine were as good as yours.
I think I probably thought that about yours. So I think it's one of those things that cuts both ways. Yeah, you always look at.
Welcome to the mutual appreciation society.
When I was in art school, we'd always just go around and go, "Oh, your shit's so much better than my shit." I mean, my shit was terrible in art school, but like. Earlier, it was the good. Yeah, you just always, I wish I was as good as you. And then they're like, I wish I was as good as you. It just goes around in a fucking, like, chain.
Yeah. I mean, it's I suppose it's easy to point out the bits that other people can do that you struggle with, and then...
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's harder to see the stuff that you're good at yourself.
Yeah. Have we ticked off everything on this episode? I'm scanning up and down.
I'm just having a look.
I think in a vague roundabout kind of way, we probably have. We've talked about Avasarala and Mao. We talked about the Mormons and the ship being commandeered. We've talked about, obviously,
I have a note, the actual
mission.
I have a note for a bit at the beginning where they're talking about what they're going to do, and Naomi says to Fred Johnson, "This is going to destroy you along with everything you've done here."
Yeah,
It's worth, like, Fred is making quite a sacrifice doing. Yeah. Like,
although can you build another Naboo? It'll take a while.
Well, yeah, but how are you going to recover from that? Let's say I'm building you a house, Chris. Right.
Oh, not even a village. Go bigger.
Yeah, well, whatever it is, I'm building something big, and then I decide to use it myself and go, fuck off, I'm just going
to
use it.
Not even that. You decide to smash it.
Yeah, you decide to destroy it, yeah.
You decide to drive a truck into it.
But, or sell it off to a movie set or something, I don't know, like...
Yeah, yeah.
But then what if it was What? But then there is a justification. Like, he can explain himself. There is a justification for it. It's like,
oh, look, yeah, but they're not gonna, you know.
Yeah, that's going to be not as important as the fact that he just took somebody else's property. I mean, I'm presuming they paid for most of the raw materials in advance and stuff.
And, and you know, the work he gets is what keeps everybody on Tycho
alive. Yeah, I mean, it's his entire workforce that he's thrown under the bus with it as well.
I mean, presumably they can now just give it back. Like, it's less of a problem now.
What they thought was going to happen. We didn't actually destroy your ship, so here it is. We'll finish up and do the rest of the job, and you're okay with that now, aren't you? You know.
Yeah. I've only just noticed this when flicking through it. This is quite a powerful shot.
Jules Permer's place is like
is there, and then what?
And is this... contrast that in your mind with the effort that Holden's family have to go to keep a bit of land.
Yeah, and there's walls. Look at those; are some pretty, you know, like Donald Trump wishes he had walls like this. You know, like
there's also when you see the shots of New York. I didn't want to mention this too early before we'd. It's not like a plot thing or anything, but before we'd. Mention it. I mean, there was a thing with what do they call it? The Yukon Archipelago, which is currently the Yukon Peninsula. So the sea levels have clearly risen. And you see on the shots of New York from like the bay, you see like sea walls. I think you mentioned it because we were talking about the London sea. Yeah. So like presumably all the occupied places in the world have got like sea walls to keep the risen sea out.
Yeah. Now I don't know if this is hang on a minute. This is like the village or where all the skyscrapers are. Well, I mean, it is obviously where all the skyscrapers are because they're skyscrapers there.
We can see the skyscrapers. But, like,
that's got to have been either like Central Park, right? That he just now owns.
I mean, it's in that, isn't it? It looks like it's on Manhattan Island, right?
I think so.
Like, yeah.
And it's so either he terraformed
unless,
a bit of
unless
like
that
New York.
Bit in the see just above your head at the moment. There's some trees.
That could be
poking over the wall, and there's a gap there.
So this could be like Park Avenue, what used to be Park Avenue or something.
Yeah,
hard to tell. Yeah.
Also,
but the point is that, as I say, contrast that with the amount of land that Miller's family have, and presumably and as we know, the massive amount of effort they had to go to maintain.
And that was rural, what would be now rural land. Yeah. Where was that? They did say, didn't they? But I can't remember where that was. Because he says a few times where
it's
from.
Is it like the Midwest or somewhere? Or?
I think somewhere Midwesty or...
Like... I mean, it could be anywhere. It could be
Montana?
It could be like the... I mean, for all we know about climate change, it could be the Nevada desert, for all we know, right?
I mean, probably.
Like, especially if they're farming wind.
Oh, Montana. Yeah, Montana.
Yeah. Mm. So Montana, that's northeast? Or is it northwest?
It's over that way.
It's in the North American trade zone on Earth.
Okay.
It's in the westish side of America, isn't
it? Is it the Northwest? The Great Northwest?
I think it's the Middle-ish West.
Midwest, yeah.
Yeah, I find the description of things in the United States quite weird.
Yeah, I get East Coast and West
Coast. But things in there's things in the center that are like way off to one side or the other, but they call the East and the West just literally just California and New York, and you know, Miami is not called they don't really count it when you talk about the East Coast, but it is.
They don't count it when you're talking about the South as a cultural sort of entity, at least. You don't mean Florida, you don't mean Texas, you mean
except you do
the Old South.
Well, I see, this is it. It chops and changes so much, because when you think of like the Everglades and like they call
Ohio the Midwest. Right. For example, they call Ohio.
The reason for this is because they were using, you know, they occupied like this bit of it when it was the colonies. Then over 400 years, they expanded. So what was the West is now like well over to the East and stuff like that.
I know what you're saying. Also, the further west you go, the more straight line borders there are and stuff.
Squarish
states and stuff.
They could go back. They could adopt the modern colloquialism of calling Florida America's penis, because kind of is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know.
Just Venus is Cornwall.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose you could call.
So is Devin the ball sack?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, but then London
honey
is the
encrusted
arse.
Devin.
London is the anus. It all matches.
Yeah.
Up. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. And does that make Wales its beer belly or something?
or the tits? It could be the tits.
Yeah. Yeah, the tits of the UK,
and East Anglia is.
What about all? You're missing out the Midlands, the north of England, Scotland. You're cutting a lot.
So Scotland, Scotland's the head.
Yeah,
obviously. I mean, it kind of even looks like a head. Yeah. The Midlands is just the nothing that nobody fucking gives a shit about.
The body and shoulders, you know, the torso.
Whatever bit people care the least about, that's what the Midlands is.
Anyway. Now that we've insulted everywhere in the UK.
Oh, no, I've got one more. We can call California the prolapse of the United States. There we go.
In so many ways.
Yes.
There we go. We are multi-partisan in this pod.
We've done a very good job of describing that episode of The X-Men.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, I think we have.
Excellent, yeah.
But yeah, Jean-Pierre Mao is, you know, the privilege is very clear in that image.
Yeah. Mm, absolutely. Cool. All right, shall we wrap it up?
Yeah.
Awesome. This is good, and I can't wait to get on to the next one. Now, are we doing the next one as a one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Sorry, Chris. I know it's unfair, but if we, I was thinking about a lot about that last night, and while I was out walking the dog, actually, before this episode, I was thinking about, you know, wanting to get on and maybe doing two episodes or three, or doing it in groups, but then how do you divide it? You know, it's easy to divide some stuff in retrospect, but not so easy as you're going through it.
You could set the divisions. You could be like, okay, these two episodes go together.
The next one is a biggie as well. We're not going to want it. Yeah,
yeah. I think it's better to leave it one per, you know, one episode of ours. You know.
Because I've cliffhangered myself in solidarity for Chris, I would like to do it soon, if possible.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, all right.
Hang on. Let's finish up the recording and talk about this.
Sounds good.
Okay, so thank you very much, everybody. Hope that made some sort of sense. And,
I'm sorry for breathing. I really am. I know how fucking annoying that is, and I apologise profusely.
It's okay.
And
it's
the racism,
sense,
like just in general. And, I don't really think it's America's prolapse.
It does.
We do.
You've not got upset with the Chinese this episode either. Right.